Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show. It is our last show of Junesploitation 2022, and we are celebrating Sword and Sorcery Day, which is today's theme, if you're listening to this the day the podcast comes out, by talking about Dungeons & Dragons from 2000, which means I am joined by the biggest mage at F This Movie, Mr. Rob DiCristino.
Critics call this movie a critical hit.
Nicely done. The day we're recording this, Rob, you are celebrating your six-year anniversary with F This Movie.
Hey.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you, buddy.
The site would not be what it is without you, so thank you for agreeing to join us and for working so hard for the last 6 years and putting out so much great stuff.
Thank you for having me, continuing to have me, and hopefully having me for a long time.
Well, we'll see after this Dungeons & Dragons show
how things go. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was like, maybe I don't get invited back.
We'll what better way to celebrate 6 years than by talking about D&D from 2000? How has your Junesploitation been?
It's been okay. I haven't gotten to really do a ton of on-theme viewing. A lot of the stuff, to give a Patrick Bromley answer, a lot of the stuff that I've been watching has been for writing and things like that. But overall, it's been pretty good. I've gotten to check out a couple new things, and I'll talk about a couple of things in a minute. How about you?
Yeah, same. I mean, I've only missed one day. I missed Jackie Chan Day, unfortunately. Otherwise, I've watched at least one movie for every day. Most of it has been rewatches, just because my tank is empty and I don't have the courage or the energy to like seek out new stuff. So I've just been grabbing stuff that I know I like or that I'm familiar with or that I haven't watched in a long time.
Why are there things happening in the world that lack you, that make you lack courage or energy? I don't understand.
No.
Could possibly be the problem.
No. By the way, I just wanted to I want to remind everyone we're coming to you from 50 years in the past this week. So thanks for being here. Also,
cool.
A podcast?
Good job, America. Thanks for that. Fuck everything.
Fuck everything is right. That is the tweet that I've like written and deleted 17 times.
Literally, guys. If you're thinking to yourself, how are they talking about 2000's Dungeons & Dragons when the world is falling apart? Just think about it for a second. You have to take refuge in absurdity. We almost need to do this. It's almost more important that we do this now.
This is the show America needs.
Jesus Christ, people. I don't... Whatever. Anyway, let's move on.
Let's talk about if you've seen anything good lately.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, so running through things here. So it was Father's Day recently.
Happy
Father's Day, Patrick.
You too.
So my son and I, we went to the movies. We saw Lightyear.
Interesting.
Which is fine, but weirdly unambitious for a Pixar film.
That was the vibe I got from the trailer.
It really isn't much of anything, and it's not to say it's not well put together. It's a perfectly fine little adventure. I was just very taken aback by the fact that it really had no ambition at all. It was not really saying anything about the Toy Story franchise. It was not really saying anything about science fiction or superheroes or Buzz Lightyear as a character. It was just what it is on the surface, which is not bad. My son enjoyed it. There's a robot cat that he really enjoyed. But it was just very odd. And I know that, you know, what they've been saying, sort of, I've been reading things about people talking about things like Seeing Red or Encanto and things like that going on Disney Plus or that, or whichever of those did not get a theatrical release. While this gets a theatrical release is really cynical and all that, and certainly something like Seeing Red is a lot more deserving of a wide release. It's not that it's bad. It's not incompetent. It's perfectly fine. Chris Evans is doing his Captain America voice, and sure. But I was just very surprised. I was just very surprised by just the fact that it really wasn't very ambitious at all. It didn't really have anything on its mind aside from space adventure, and I guess that's fine. I don't know.
I have no desire to ever see it, which is
You're kind of out of the age range where you would really need to, I think, right? I mean, your kids are kind of beyond Lightyear at this point, I think.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, my daughter's 10. She might get a kick out of it, but I'm too busy showing them stuff that's, you know, wildly inappropriate for them.
Sure. Like you do.
Like I do, but yeah, I just can't. And I, you know, kind of like the Toy Story movies, although my daughter's in this phase where she's only watching Toy Story 4, and I do not love that movie.
I've only seen it the once. I don't remember disliking it, but if you asked me what happens in that movie, I couldn't tell you.
It's fine. It's just everything after Toy Story 2 is just a repeat of Toy Story 1 or 2.
Yeah, this is the Bo Peep one, right? This is the Bo Peep.
This is the Bo Peep, right.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, as Adam and I realized in reserve seating, Toy Story 2 rules.
Yes, it's the best one.
And other than that, I mean, Toy Story 1, I have lots of nostalgia for. I could probably recite the whole thing. But, yeah, no, I didn't really need any more Toy Story after that. So,
no.
I don't know. We all have odd fascinations sometimes, and Lightyear just wasn't... I mean, again, if you enjoyed Lightyear, that's great. I don't think it was badly made. I just... It had nothing going. The most exciting thing was there was some asshole at my screening who decided to make a big deal about two moms. That was a real problem for him on Father's Day. He decided to make that everybody else's problem.
Wow.
He decided to shout out to everybody, how come kids movies just can't be kids movies? Because of course, you know, people don't have families or...
If there's two moms, it's not a kids movie.
It can't be a kids movie if there's two loving parents.
It becomes for adults.
Becomes something else. Yeah,
it's so, too woke is the problem
again. Fuck everything.
In a related story
fuck everything. But yeah, that was the most I really got out of Lightyear, was that disgust.
So, ugh.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I finally caught up with Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay.
Which I didn't get to go to see, and I'm seeing it long after I know everybody else did. And as you know, I'm maybe the world's biggest Swiss Army Man fan. I know nobody else really enjoys that movie. I think it's pretty great. Hot take, I guess. I think that's a much better movie than Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Interesting.
Everything Everywhere All at Once reminded me of like a freshman philosophy major who just read Jean-Paul Sartre's Nausea for the first time and discovered nihilism and decided to shout at a girl at a party for 2 hours.
Okay.
Have you heard of this? Have you heard of that? Do you know that life is depressing and that, you know, if nothing we do means anything, the only thing that means anything is what we do and all that. And it was fine if you're just, you know, discovering these concepts and stuff. But yeah, it's a young man's movie. It was overstuffed and it got obnoxious at a certain point. it was too much, and I understand that's the point. Please don't. I understand the point is that it's overwhelming, but you can't shout the same point for 2.5 hours and expect me to be like, I don't know. It was just one of those sophomore slumps. I can't actually remember if this is their second movie. I know it's their second sort of major film. I think.
Right.
Definitely a sophomore slump. Kind of give them the keys and let them do it. You know, we bump them up, and they go too far. And I think I think Daniels are incredibly creative dudes. I'm sure I'll like whatever they do next. I'll definitely watch it, but this one just wasn't it for me.
I feel like I liked this better than Swiss Army Man, and I say that as somebody who still doesn't love it. But there was stuff for me to grab onto, and at the very least, there was the Michelle Yeoh performance, which I really liked.
Which is great, and yeah. There's tons of little things in there that work. There's it was just a little bit too much, that's all.
Sure. It's a lot of movie.
It's a lot of movie, and a lot of it is very fun, but it gets draining after a while.
It's definitely a movie that I'm going to have to revisit in a few years when some of the noise has quieted down, because sure it's a victim of expectations, right? When you have people tweeting out, like, famous critics, not just random people on Twitter, famous critics tweeting out, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to go in with inflated expectations, and so if it doesn't live up to that, then it's like, well... this movie's disappointing, but I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe in a few years I'll warm up to it a little bit more. But
and I'm, you know, I'm in the same boat. Maybe I turn it on in a year and I go, oh, you know what? I really was too hard on this, and that's perfectly fair. And I may like it more next time. But right now, this is that situation where I'm like, getting me to sit down and watch that again is going to be the performances are fun. It's got a lot of imagination. It's got a lot of I was going to say it's got a lot of ideas, but really just has the one idea. it's just, it's got the one idea over and over again, which is what kind of bothered me. But again, super creative dudes, definitely going to watch what they make next. I'm glad they're around. I'm glad a movie like this exists. I'll put it that way.
That's a good attitude to take.
You know what I mean? That's it. If I was 20 and I watched it, I would be like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. You know what I mean? And that's me. That's a problem, you know, as you're wont to say, that this is a problem with me.
I understand.
I understand that I'm the problem.
Yeah.
But it was too much. Other than that, that's really all I've got that's worth noting. I have a bunch of stuff that I'm going to write about for next week, so you'll maybe at this point have read some of it. But I don't know. I watched Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, how's that?
It's not good.
No?
I know I'm losing some Star Wars cred by saying that. I don't know. Maybe some of you are gasping right now. No, it's episode 3 again. They just dressed it up a little differently. It's the exact same character arc and sort of emotional catharsis of Revenge of the Sith. They just did it a little bit different, and I know...
What was the emotional catharsis of Revenge of the Sith?
That Anakin Skywalker is bad.
Oh.
And that Obi-Wan Kenobi feels bad about it.
Okay.
There's some cool images, which I've seen a lot of people on Twitter kind of saying, like, this is the greatest, like, this is Star Wars, like, this is what I love, and... And listen, it's perfectly fine. Nostalgia is powerful, and I'm glad if you enjoyed it, that's wonderful. I've loved Star Wars longer than I've loved almost anything in my life. But I'm now to the point where I understand that Last Jedi aside, Disney Star Wars is not for me. Star Wars fans want what they like repeated over and over with a different shell, with a different color. I really haven't liked. I thought Mandalorian season one was pretty great, mostly because it plays on samurai and cowboy archetypes the same way Star Wars did.
Right.
But at least it had some new things and had some new ideas. And every Star Wars show since then has just been fan wank. It's just, it's fine. It's just not for me. Again, if you liked it, that's great. But no, not so much. They tricked you guys. They tricked you into watching episode 3 again. I guess good for them.
When there are, what, 11 movies and 4 TV shows at this point, what are people referring to when they say this is Star Wars?
Oh, don't ask me. I'm the last person you want to ask. Again, I love The Last Jedi. I'm the last person
I love The Last Jedi, too.
I'm the last person you want to ask about what Star Wars is or should be.
Okay.
I thought the second season, I thought all that Luke Skywalker stuff was embarrassing in Mandalorian. I think so much of it is just give me what I love back at me again.
Mm-hmm.
The plot of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Patrick, stay with me. The Empire has kidnapped Princess Leia.
As a child, right?
And we need to get her back.
This is...
Guys, that's Star Wars. That's
Nobody brings that up in Star Wars. That's so she doesn't. She never says this shit again.
I watched it. I got to the end of like the second episode. I was like, wait, what? And again, maybe you're sitting there thinking, that's bullshit. No, guys, it's the same thing. They sold it to you again, which is what they do. And I just want the Star Wars universe to get bigger. Mandalorian kind of started that a little bit, and then they just completely just inversed, and that's fine. It's totally fine. Star Wars is cafeteria, you know, or it's a buffet or whatever they say. It's that thing where you just walk around and take what you want and leave the rest. If you love Obi-Wan Kenobi, if you love, you know, Book of Boba Fett, that's great. I'm a Star Wars fan. I am not devoted to Star Wars in the way that some folks are. I'm devoted to Dungeons and Dragons, the 2000 film, in that way. But
this is your jam.
There was quite a bit of hoopla over Hayden Christensen returning
from Little Sicily,
from Little Italy.
Little Italy, sorry, damn it.
Yeah, Little Italy's Hayden Christensen. He's got a little handful of scenes. He's not in it much. I don't know. It's fine. I don't understand what Star Wars wants from me anymore. I'm going to try to read some of the books. I hear some of the new Marvel published books are good. So if you have any recommendations for that, leave them in comments, I guess. I've gotten everything from Star Wars that I need. And I'm happy. I have students who have a lot of nostalgia for the prequels, and they're very excited for Disney's takes on Star Wars. And that's great. I'm moving on. It's kind of comforting. I got to the end of Obi-Wan and I was like, I think I'm just done. I think this is just not for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. There's a lot of good stuff for me, and I'm glad that people have things that they like.
If the Disney films had like sort of followed through on The Last Jedi, it could still be for you, and that's what's kind of upsetting.
It could be. It's not really ambitious anymore. It's not interested in challenging ideas. It's not interested in really examining anything new. I don't know. It's just not for me anymore. And I feel sad about that, but I have my Star Wars. This is the lesson we take away, which is I have my Star Wars and it's always going to be there. Nobody can take it from me.
Right.
And that's great. If they can make more Star Wars is better than less Star Wars, even though most Star Wars is bad.
Are they working on movies at all, or have they like pivoted exclusively to TV at this point?
It seems as though they've really pivoted away. I mean, I just read what they publish in the trades like everybody else, and it just basically says that, you know, they've really put the brakes on the feature films and they're just going to try to focus as much as possible on TV shows. The Taika Waititi movie I think is still happening.
Okay.
I don't know if the Rogue Squadron movie is still happening. I don't know about that. It really does look like they're taking a hard look at it after Rise of Skywalker, and with good reason. I think I don't really think Disney understands. I don't really think Disney has any ideas for movies. I don't think they really know what they want to say, and I think you see that when you watch the sequel trilogy. Rian Johnson's aside, I think it's kind of just like, well, I don't know, like do Star Wars things. And JJ has said as much, you know, in interviews about Rise of Skywalker. You know, we didn't really have a script, we didn't really know where we were going, and we were overwhelmed by the time constraints and all that. And I just think the production line for that property is just, it's got to shift to just TV, which is, they've got all kinds of TV shows lined up. And
oh, good.
I hope that people enjoy them.
I can't wait.
I get a whole Ahsoka show. I get a whole, you know, which, I mean, listen, Rosario Dawson, you and I are both big fans.
Definitely. But I don't know that character at all.
No, but that's okay because I know a lot of people do. And that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Again, it's just I'm just moving on. Star Wars isn't really for me anymore, and I'm just gonna walk out into the ocean and
wearing all my clothes
and just be at peace.
According to IMDb, Rogue Squadron is still happening, directed by Patty Jenkins.
Good, Patty Jenkins. Yeah, I'd be happy to see them move away. I heard Taika's movie is gonna move away from Skywalker related things, which would be great. But every time they try to make the Star Wars franchise a little bigger, they make it a little smaller again.
I hope the Taika movie has a lot of like characters just like taking a beat and going like, wow, that's awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of, you know, kind of just self-referential humor.
Yeah.
And a lot of, what do we think? I'm seeing Thor on Wednesday, Patrick. I, by the time you're listening to this, I will have seen Thor. Are you excited?
Am I excited? Not
I mean, not
really.
That you're excited about a Marvel movie, but I mean, are
right.
you excited? Like,
I'm excited to see Natalie Portman play Thor.
There you
like,
go.
That's something different.
Yeah,
so that's what I'm hanging my hat on right now.
I think Ragnarok is half of a good movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed enough of Ragnarok to like be entertained by it for the 2 hours that it lasted.
Yeah,
I haven't gone back to revisit it ever, much like most of the Marvel movies. So I don't necessarily think that Love and Thunder is going to enter my rotation, but Natalie Portman, Thor,
more Tessa.
Right.
It's that, you know, you just see them, you think about them leaning into, oh boy, this is the people really like the Taika.
Right.
Like,
right.
Give him, you know, again, let him go full Taika, which could be good. Maybe this time he doesn't have that distracting Cate Blanchett plot from Ragnarok, which guys, I'm sorry, that part of the movie. I mean, she's great, but that part of the movie is awful. But I don't know. I'm hot takes today. I'm like Adam. I'm like
yeah.
dropping some hot takes. Thor Ragnarok
Shit.
Is kind of half good. Everything Everywhere All at Once is overrated.
Done with Star Wars?
Done with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Wasn't impressed by Kenobi. Sorry, guys and girls and everyone in between. I really just didn't. They just watch Revenge of the Sith again if that's what you want. It's the same movie.
And just wait till you double down on Dungeons and Dragons.
I can't, guys. Jeremy, I've been sitting there, I watched it, and I was like, I'm going to do my Jeremy Irons impression. I was like, do I have a Jeremy Irons? Hello, I'm Jeremy. No, I don't have a Jeremy Irons impression.
No, I'm sorry. I also think that Thor might be the only character that Chris Hemsworth can play. based on a movie that I'm going to talk about.
Okay. All right. So go ahead. Because I think I know where you're going with this, and I want to hear it.
I watched Spiderhead.
Okay.
Because the internet keeps telling me Joseph Kosinski is a great filmmaker. And so I watched Spiderhead, starring Chris Hemsworth and Miles Teller. And I didn't hate Miles Teller in it, so that's an accomplishment.
That's and listen, that was my big takeaway from both The Offer and Top Gun Maverick.
Which, I still haven't seen The Offer, but I didn't hate him in Top Gun Maverick, although I didn't love him in Top Gun Maverick.
No, but I've hated him for so long. I've just wanted to hit him. Like, he has the most punchable face in Hollywood,
especially with that fucking mustache.
Fucking yeah, but that at least I was like, all right.
And his name's Rooster, and he plays Great Balls of Fire. what are we doing? What are we doing?
That movie's good. I saw that movie twice. That movie's good.
Sure. So Spiderhead, I don't love. It is, I don't even know how to classify it. It's sort of a science fiction drama about this prison where they're conducting experiments.
So is this an Andrew Garfield? Is this a Tom Holland Spiderhead? Is this a, does Toby show up in this one?
He does not, unfortunately. None of the other Spiderheads show up. And I was like, when I go see Spiderhead movies now, I expect all the Spiderheads to be in.
They all have to.
Remember when we lost our minds for that shit as a country? Yeah. And now we're like, well, really? that's such a big deal.
That's what we did. They walked out of the portal, Patrick.
Yeah.
Guys, tell me what happens in the first hour of that movie. I bet you can't.
What happens in the last hour? They fight on some scaffolding.
Right, but that movie gets 40% more charming when they show up. I will admit that. But you can't tell me what happens in the first hour of that movie before they do. Nobody can.
They round up villains and decide not to kill them.
Sure, okay, fine.
And it's great, because it's like, I recognize so-and-so from that other thing.
It's just like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right, exactly. This is what movies have become. But that's a lot of Top Gun Maverick, too. It's a lot of, like, I remember playing with the boys, and now they're playing with the boys.
I will argue that I really like Top Gun Maverick because of, I like the simplicity of its approach. I like the idea that it's, and people who can say it's the same movie, I don't think it's structured the same way.
It's not structured the exact same way.
I think there's a big difference, because in the first Top Gun, the mission comes up at the very end out of nowhere. And it's not really about anything until then. In this movie, it's like Ocean's 11, where it's like, okay, here's the plan from the beginning. This is what we're going to do, and we're going to practice it over and over.
Which
and
is
over
great,
again.
The way
and
that
there's
they
a Top Gun movie. There's a Top Gun movie weaved in between that.
Right.
That's where I think the repetition is.
The way that they structure that in terms of, like, we're going to show you exactly what we have to do, and we're going to show it to you a couple of times so that when it finally happens, you really understand it. That's very smart filmmaking. You know, one of my issues with Top Gun Maverick is in the last 15 minutes, it turns into this weird jokey buddy movie.
And there's apparently
a complete
that maybe there was a, yes, that the ending was redone.
A complete shift in tone. And I'm like, if it didn't do that, I would probably like it 25% more.
I can totally concede that point. It does feel like a completely different movie in the last bit. And I have no answer for you on that. I like that movie that it's doing too. I think when Tom Cruise tries to be buddy buddy, it's a little awkward, but you know, because he's not a human being. He's not Zuckerberg, kind of like, oh, this is what humans do.
Right.
I don't know. I enjoy that movie for what it is.
Yeah. Listen, I'm glad that it's very successful, and I'm glad that so many people are loving it. Spiderhead is just not great. It's fine. It's like a Netflix movie, so that should tell you everything you need to know about it. But Chris Hemsworth, I'm just not sold on as an actor. I've liked him and stuff. I find him charming. He's great as Thor. I remember sort of liking his Michael Mann impression in Black Hat. but other stuff that I've seen him in, I'm just like, I don't know if he's the guy.
Do you feel like he may be approaching that, he's more machine than man, the Dwayne the Rock Johnson problem, where he's more product than performer, like where he comes in and he has a brand and he kind of has to adhere to that. I don't think he's quite there yet, but maybe he's just settled into his, not even his range, but just his wheelhouse of tricks and the expectations placed upon him as, like, this is what people want from Hemsworth. So maybe that's where he's at. Because I'm thinking like Ghostbusters 2016, and then like some of the things that he's asked to do there, and even as back as like Cabin in the Woods, where he's kind of playing the hunky goofball as well.
Right.
You know, yeah, maybe he's not. He just really hasn't particularly been asked to do too much more than, except for in Black Hat, as you said, which is a little, it feels a little bit performative. It feels a little bit like he's playing it up and he's not really quite there.
Right. Yeah.
He's no Miami Vice. He's no Colin Farrell on Miami Vice.
Well, no, few people are. Colin Farrell, who was, I believe, reportedly high on cocaine throughout the entire filming of Miami Vice,
says he has no memory of the movie.
That's right.
No memory of me.
It's a miracle that movie turned out to be a masterpiece.
Oh, you know what's so good?
What?
The opening of that movie.
Yeah, unless you watch the friggin' director's cut.
It's got to be the theatrical cut, right? Yeah, because I think I have the director's cut's the only one that's available on Blu-ray, right?
On like region 1 Blu-ray, yeah, apparently. There's like a UK or a Canadian Blu-ray that you can import that has possibly both cuts, if not just the theatrical.
No, the one that drops in with the Linkin Park song, and that's amazing.
The only reason I like that Linkin Park song is because of Miami Vice.
That's what I think about every time I hear it.
If it can make you like a garbage song better, it's doing its job.
Guys, we are trying so hard not to talk about Dungeons & Dragons.
So then I watched Spiderhead, and then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to revisit Tron Legacy because...
Okay, there you go.
I gotta understand this Joseph Kosinski guy. And
what are you? Okay, so what? Before we get into that, what are you just? He's just kind of reading sort of boilerplate to you. He's not reading as anything special.
I just don't understand. Like I get his contributions to Top Gun Maverick in terms of, you know, doing things practically, and really putting again that sort of structure, laying that structure over. I mean, a lot of that, you know, supposedly is credited to Christopher McQuarrie, who worked on the screenplay, which is, he's like one of Tom Cruise's guys. He does a lot right in Top Gun Maverick. So I think that's probably his best movie. I haven't revisited Oblivion. I pulled the Blu-ray to rewatch it, but I haven't. But I rewatched Tron Legacy because then a bunch of people are like, yeah, Tron Legacy, so good, so good. And it is not. It is great to look at. At times I would say the aesthetic becomes overwhelming because it's very dark and just neon, and it starts to repeat itself in terms of the visual style. As a story or as a narrative, it is garbage. It is a movie that overestimates our willingness to accept Garrett Hedlund as a leading man. It has two Jeff Bridges performances. One is him as an old man trapped in a computer since 1982, and he's very good in that. And then it has another Jeff Bridges performance, which is like, they didn't digitally de-age him so much as they recreated him on a computer. So it's like a whole performance, and they go way too hard on it because he's in so much of the movie. And he looks like sort of like that Peter Cushing from the end of Rogue One, where it's like, you're very clearly a cartoon. Why are you in so much of this movie? The movie Secret Weapon is Olivia Wilde, who's in a better movie than anybody else, and she's great. And I'm so glad that she found directing, or... you know, that Booksmart was kind of a hit and is going to allow her to direct more films, because I think Hollywood never quite figured out how to use her or what to do with her. I mean, her last major acting role that I can think of is Richard Jewell, and just look how that turned out.
Oh, what do you mean? Was there not the proper depth of her character in that film you were looking for? Was there like maybe any kind of like horrible stereotyping or sort of, you know, belligerent bigotry or anything like that about that character? I don't really remember. Yikes. That film. No, I super do remember that movie.
I'm Clint Eastwood. I hate journalists and women.
They lie to you. They just lie. They lie.
You know who will never turn on you? A chair.
Yeah. What if the kid had a rooster? That's all.
I love Clint Eastwood. I'm not shit talking Clint Eastwood, but that
one of our great American directors also talked to a chair.
Right, that aspect of Richard Jewell was not great, and
nope.
and Olivia Wilde maybe seeing the writing on the wall, because just you look at her IMDb credits and you're like, oh, here she is in Cowboys and Aliens playing the girl, and here she is in Richard Jewell playing the girl.
Bitch.
Right. Even in Tron Legacy, it's like, I'm the girl. She just happens to steal the scenes that she's in. And the Daft Punk score is one of the best scores of recent years, and it makes it seem like the movie is so much better than it actually is.
And that's something I think I've seen a lot of too. So I haven't seen, so when I saw Tron Legacy, I had not yet seen Tron. So I went to see Tron Legacy because it came out around the time where I saw everything. And then in the years since, have watched Tron, remember very little about either movie.
Yeah, I don't even love Tron. So I guess maybe I'm not the audience for Tron Legacy. I don't know. You don't necessarily have to have seen Tron to see Tron Legacy, although it helps in terms of some of the Jeff Bridges stuff and in terms of like Bruce Boxleitner showing up, and you're like, hey, I'm happy to see Bruce Boxleitner show up in a movie, which is the first time I've said that since 1982. Yeah, I wanted to like be surprised at it being sneaky good, and it didn't happen for me.
I was thinking of what you were saying about Olivia Wilde, and I feel like Bryce Dallas Howard is trying to go that way too.
Definitely.
Where she's getting into that, like, all right, you know what? I'm aging out of the girl role. I'm going to direct, and good for her.
It is good for her. It's bad for me because it means I see less of her in movies.
Well, that's true. Yes, it is.
But it is good for her. And by what I hear, her episodes of the Star Wars TV shows are very good. That hers are some of the better ones.
Sure.
I haven't
think
watched
she did
any
the,
of them.
She did, if I'm remembering correctly, I believe she did the Seven Samurai episode of Mandalorian. Let's see. Yes, I believe, and if you're shouting right now at your podcaster, she directed the episode in which it's Seven Samurai. Basically, there's an Imperial walker threatening a town, and the Mandalorian has to come in and help. And that episode is good. I think that's probably one of the better episodes of the first season.
Okay, I might have seen that episode. That might be the last one that I saw.
Yes. Yeah. It's called Sanctuary. And it's
and that's
one.
Where Gina Carano shows up, I think, for the first time.
Yes.
Okay.
Which
may be why I bailed on it. I don't know.
I was going to say, yeah, I can't remember where she is in the canceled cycle. I think she's still out, right? Yeah, again, I like Mandalorian season one, not to talk about Star Wars again, because it's just cowboys and samurais.
Right.
And there's not a lot of Star Wars bullshit in it.
Right.
But then they added all the Star Wars bullshit back in and made the world smaller again.
We did a 1982 double feature. I've been doing lots of 1982 rewatches, celebrating 4 years of my 40 years rather of my favorite movie year ever. For Lethal Ladies Day, we did a 1982 double feature of Blade Runner and Cat People. That was fascinating. And then yesterday for Revenge Day, I couldn't find a revenge movie to show my kids. Charlie has seen Kill Bill Volume 1. He still hasn't seen Volume 2 just because we never got to it. But I didn't really want to show it to Rosie, so I was like, well, that's probably irresponsible parenting. So I went with Real Genius, because I was like, well, you got that popcorn ending. That's kind of a revenge.
Yeah.
Rosie likes to watch comedies. Charlie likes almost everything now. And when it was over, he said, that movie was awesome. It's one of my favorite movies. He found Val Kilmer's character to be very funny. I really love Real Genius. I've always loved it. I recognize that it's overly long. I felt myself getting a little restless during the last act last night because it goes on a little bit too long with the like planning of the revenge. I almost wish they could have just gone straight from like, he did what to us? Ha ha. And then the popcorn. But
there's
a lot of like sneaking into government buildings and wearing fake mustaches and looking like Rooster. And I will say that my crush on Michelle Mayrink's character Jordan remains unabated. She's still the best.
She seems very much like a Patrick Bromley type crush.
Yeah, she's great.
You know what's funny about Real Genius? The one thing I always remember about it, which it's not a movie I've seen a lot, but I think it was the first movie. I don't remember which order, but being growing up very familiar with Ghostbusters and Die Hard, I think this was the first movie I saw William Atherton in that wasn't one of those movies. And it was kind of one of those like, oh, that guy. And it was I just always remember, I have some memory stuck in my head about like, it was my first kind of, oh, that guy.
Right.
As a young person. Lot of Al, since the documentary and since Top Gun Maverick, a lot of Val Kilmer are kind of love out there right now. That still holds up, his performance, because that's his first big one, right?
Top Secret would technically be his
comes first, yeah.
But then Real Genius, and Real Genius definitely positions him as sort of like a wisecracking Bill Murray type, which
a very different.
Yeah, he didn't really play that for the rest of his career. I mean, I still enjoy him. I see why some people would watch it and reject him and feel he's very smug. Like I said, Charlie liked him and recognized him right away as soon as he came on screen. He said, "That's Val Kilmer from Top Gun Maverick." Like, yeah, that sure is.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's a good one, that Charlie. He's a good egg.
He is.
He's a drummer, too, which I approve of. I was very happy to see that he's taken up the sticks. As a fellow drummer, I appreciate that.
He's a very good drummer for 13. He's way better than I ever was. I always wished I could play the drums, and I can't. So,
take him there, Spartacus. I support you.
That's right. It's his favorite movie.
Damn right. You want to talk about That Thing You Do?
Yeah. Let's talk. It's Sword and Sorcery Day. Let's talk about That Thing You Do.
All right. Are you done? Did you go through all your stuff?
I'm good.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever played Dungeons & Dragons?
I played it a little bit when I was a kid because my brother was way into it and his friends were way into it. So they would have long campaigns in my childhood bedroom because we shared a room. I got into it a little bit, and then again as a way to like differentiate myself, I started seeking out other role-playing games. Like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles role-playing game, or there was one called Toon, where it was all basically everybody was a cartoon that I would run campaigns for. But I was not a big D&D guy. How about yourself?
No, not a ton. No, we've played my group of friends and I've known since like third grade. We've played off and on occasionally. We did a couple rounds of Shadowrun, which is a sort of a more kind of a sci-fi cyberpunky kind of role playing game. A couple of my friends are really into Warhammer, so I've played a little bit. I'm familiar. I watched Critical Role. I've listened to some D&D podcasting and things like that. I'm sort of familiar with it. I'm a fan of it. Certainly enough to recognize kind of the way the film that we're going to talk about is sort of set up as like, oh, there's a party. You know, there's a party. There's a mage. There's an elf. There's a troll. All that stuff. Not a ton. We were much more Magic the Gathering. We were big into Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
Which is also Wizards of the Coast, but it's much more card based. It's more Zoomers might know Pokemon. You know, Pokemon cards. You've got a monster. You put out a thing. You know, that's largely kind of derivative of Magic the Gathering, which is I know maybe for some of you kind of not quite as you know, I don't get as much nerd cred for that as if I were a D&D player, but so a lot of Magic the Gathering mostly growing up. The problem is it becomes prohibitively expensive because you have to keep,
well, that's how Pokemon cards were. Charlie got way into Pokemon cards a couple of years ago and that got very expensive.
It gets super. They put out new sets every, you know, season, or sometimes twice a season. And in order to keep, we never play competitively, but if the folks who play competitively, if any of you are listening, you know, you have to kind of spend so much money on the new cards and learning the new rules and the new mechanics. And it's a great game. I have a ton of fun playing it. I still play with old cards sometimes, but I've certainly gotten out of going out and buying new ones because it got too, they're like 16 generations ahead of where I stopped playing. So I'm no longer in it, but so I just wanted to clarify before we get into the movie where our sort of RPG type, you know, history is.
Well, not being familiar with Dungeons and Dragons or not playing a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, I didn't find a hindrance to enjoying this movie. What I did find a hindrance to enjoying this movie was this movie.
The movie,
And also my allergy to some fantasy shit. I have what I think is the opening narration pulled up on my laptop here, and I just want to read it.
Oh, you found it. Okay.
It's from a site called scripts.com. Someone transcribed the whole script, but it's all as one long.
It's like a text format kind of.
There's no character names like telling you who says what.
It's just a transcript.
It's just the words.
I've seen those before. Yeah. When I taught my film theory classes, I would try to look for screenplay pages, and I mostly have used IMSDB.com, which is a great resource for actually script formatted pages. But I found a lot of those where it's sort of just a transcript of all the dialogue. Yeah. But go ahead.
It's insane. All right, so here's the opening narration of Dungeons & Dragons from 2000. The Empire of Izmir has long been a divided land, ruled by the mages, an elite group of magic users. The lowly commoners, those without magic, are little more than slaves. Izmir's young empress, Savina, wishes equality and prosperity for all, but the evil mage, Profion, has other intentions. And I'm out. Like, honestly, that's as far as I made it. I was like, oh, shit, this is one of those.
That was definitely, I was watching this last night and my eyes just crossed. I was just like, well, nope. I guess this is going to be one where I've got Wikipedia open while I'm watching.
Well, you know.
Guess what? That wasn't help either.
the context is important because this is New Line, which I just have to say, I miss the days of the New Line Platinum Series DVD, of which this is one. When we decided we were doing this, I found a used copy on eBay for like $2, and it came as a New Line Platinum Series DVD. And I was like, man, I used to love these things because they had so much extra content. And it made it about 47 minutes in and then froze and wouldn't play any further. My DVD player flat out rejected this film, and so then I had to go on Vudu and rent it. So I had to pay twice for Dungeons and Dragons 2000.
Oh no!
So that I could see the rest of the story. I thought about just trying to do the podcast having only seen the first 47 minutes, but there was another hour I was missing, and that's so much like CG dragons I would have missed, and Marlon Wayans dying, and
Windows 98 screensavers.
The whole thing looks like a DVD menu.
It does.
From like 1998. Just all these tracking shots through castles. I just kept waiting for it to say like play movie, special features, setup.
It reminded me very much of Mortal Kombat Annihilation, the second Mortal Kombat.
I don't think I ever even saw that one.
If you've seen that, you know what I'm talking about. The CGI is very, very similar. No, I was going to say, when we decided to watch this, sometimes, to peel back the curtain a little bit, sometimes Patrick will text me and say, hey, you want to do a show, you know, on this date? And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. All right, great. Let's figure it out. And we'll go back and forth and we'll text a little bit about, like, do you want to do this? Or we've always wanted to do a show on this. Or we've always wanted to do a show. Should we try this one? Sometimes we put something out there and it's like, maybe not that one. We go back and forth a little bit. And when we realized that we were going to do one for Sword and Sorcery Day, I put out a bunch of suggestions and we were like, let's keep thinking about it. I'm not really sure. And then at one point, Patrick just texts back and said, fuck it, let's do Dungeons and Dragons. So this was a fuck it show.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
In the grand tradition of Midnight in the Switchgrass. Anyway.
This is New Line a year before Lord of the Rings.
Which is interesting because I was reading in my cursory glance at Wikipedia, which qualifies as research, that they sort of specifically kind of overdid it with this one because it was kind of a test run for Lord of the Rings.
It's amazing to me that they continued production on three Lord of the Rings movies. I mean, obviously they were already in production, I think, by the time this movie came out. But if this is your warm-up, don't you get cold feet? Like, nothing about this movie works.
It doesn't seem to be. So I think it's probably time for us to talk about Courtney Solomon.
Of course.
Who is the director, producer, and I think co-writer of the film, who, according to the internet, has basically shepherded this project. This was a dream project for him. He had connections. He wasn't a producer or really anything to do with the film industry, but he had some industry connections and was able to parlay that into a development deal that he was, and then got in front of Joel Silver, and it eventually made its way to the product that we have now. And this very much feels like somebody who had an idea, and in Hollywood these things kind of live, you know, this guy's got a script, that guy's got a script, this guy has an overall deal, and all the pieces kind of move around, and sometimes they smush against each other and eventually become a movie that goes out and a distributor picks it up or a studio produces it or whatever it is. And I'm in the middle of reading, have you ever read Hit and Run, the John Peters book?
I have not.
The book about John Peters and Peter Gruber and how they took over Sony and ran it into the ground in the 90s. And it's essentially, I was thinking a lot about that book reading, watching this, because that book is full of stories of people who have half-baked ideas that become multi-million dollar flops, movies. This felt very much to me like that, where this person has a lot of passion for the idea, doesn't really have any idea how to execute it, ends up in a position where he's going to direct it because of lack of interest or lack of follow-through or lack of industry clout from the other sort of big names he wanted to shepherd the project or head the project. Good intentions. Seems like he really wanted this to be good. Seems like people wanted to get to be good, but it just doesn't, there's just nothing. It just has no, it's completely inept and it has no life to it. So part of what I want to say before we get too far into it is, like, there is a little part of my heart that breaks for this movie, mm-hmm. because it feels like, knowing the background, it feels like this guy really took a swing and just got nothing out of it. And it was a disaster.
It's a disaster, and I honestly started it feeling optimistic because I had never seen it, and I literally just watched it today on two different platforms. Because that's fuck everything. But I honestly started it, and the opening narration happens, and I was like, oh boy. But then there's like a little bit of a theme that's probably a tad overly heroic. But I was on board. I was like, sure, I'll follow you, Dungeons and Dragons. And then it just proceeded to lose me with every new quote unquote plot development, every new character introduction, every new special effect. The editing is inept. I mean, it's just a really shitty movie. And I believe that, you know, as you pointed out, shitty movies can happen even with good intentions. Perhaps this one was doomed from the start because Courtney Solomon had never directed before and wasn't prepared for a movie of this size and scope. And I clearly didn't have the budget. I mean, $45 million is not cheap, but to realize the vision that I think he had for this movie, I don't think he could do it on the $45 million New Line budget. And it's fascinating that, again, it comes out literally a year before Lord of the Rings, and the Lord of the Rings movies are the best D&D movies ever made.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It does feel like he got the short end of the stick on this. It feels like, you know, they say, you know, success has many parents and failure is an orphan. This feels like this is an orphan movie.
This feels like this was made for the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, we just watched all the Highlander movies over on reserved seating, and by the time we got to Highlander 5, which we watched, like, because Adam said to me, like, hey, a lot of people seem to have watched this last one. Maybe we should do one more. Let's do this made for TV movie. And we got about 10 minutes into it, and we're like, I think this might have been a mistake. this looks like it was shot like. Like, you know, somebody's got a, it's like one of those like Alex Jones type things where he's got a desk and he's got a green screen and he makes it look like a newsroom.
Right,
you know, there's so many of those scenes in that movie where there's a green screen and an IKEA desk and a quote unquote actor. And you're like, oof.
Oof.
I will say, Patrick, you were texting me while you were watching this movie today. And one of my favorite things you said was, is someone holding Thora Birch's family hostage?
She seems because openly miserable in this movie.
She is in this movie, and she's doing... Imagine the princess from Neverending Story.
Which is all I could think of, because they keep calling her the Empress.
The Empress, yeah. And, you know, Bastion, say my name. It's right. But she's just like, say my name. Wait, no, don't say it like that. Say it a little different. Can you say it? Say my name. No, she, no, don't.
And she had been good in stuff.
You're a great actress. Yeah.
After American Beauty. This is like the same year as Ghost World, or maybe a year before Ghost World. I know it's early 2000s. which she's great in, and there's just no evidence of her being an accomplished actor in this performance.
She looks completely lost, and I hate to further dig myself into a hole, but she's got Natalie Portman in the prequel vibes in this movie.
Yeah, I think
she's a good
it,
actress,
right?
And she's meant to, she's meant to portray an energy that she doesn't have.
And I think some of it is just not know. I think there are people who know how to act among special effects, and I think it's becoming more and more probably commonplace. And then there are people who get swallowed up by it. I was, you know, listening. I'm only probably 15 minutes into last week's Blank Check about Oz the Great and Powerful, and I was remembering that movie, which I haven't seen since opening night when I saw it with Adam. And I just was thinking about how Mila Kunis gets swallowed up by the special effects in that movie and by the special effects in Jupiter Ascending. Something about Mila Kunis just doesn't work with special effects. And Thora Birch has that same kind of thing going on where she just feels lost, like Natalie Portman.
Yeah. And again, no disrespect to Thora Birch. It's not, you can easily recognize a good actor in a bad situation. It's,
sure.
It's just,
she,
it's
she's
just
not alone.
Things.
The problem with this movie is, one of the problems with this movie is everyone's giving a different kind of bad performance.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where we talk about sort of, you know, we talked earlier about like authorial stamps and like when a person has coherent control over a film and can at least, you know, director's job mostly is tone, right? So the idea is that I'm going to try to make sure that everything fits in the same tone. And there's just wildly inconsistent performances, as you said. Jeremy Irons is, you know, performing for the back row. He's shouting to the rooftops. But then you cut to Thora Birch, and she's
right.
Like looking around. She's looking around the room, going like, "We must fight for freedom," you know. And it's like, you know,
those two performances cannot coexist in the same movie.
I feel bad for her. I felt like secondhand shame and awkwardness, like watching. I was like, "Oh my god, I feel so bad for her." Like he's just like, "I'm just gonna go for it," you know. You know, victory. You know, and you know, guy's got purple lips, and you know, there's just all this shit going on, and we haven't even talked about Marlon Wayans yet.
And snails, are you talking about? It made me miss Masters of the Universe, which gets a bad rap for being a real shitty movie that kind of ended canon films, my beloved canon. And I recognize that as an adult watching Masters of the Universe, there's a lot of bad shit in there, and you're like, oh, I see why this is inaccessible to anybody but a child of the 80s who grew up watching He-Man and on the, you know, on cartoons. But you know, you have some ingenuity there, and you have some creativity, and you have Frank Langella giving a really fun performance as Skeletor. He's probably every bit as big as Jeremy Irons, but he seems to be having a good time. Jeremy Irons doesn't even seem to be enjoying himself going this big.
And he apparently did the movie as like a favor to Joel Silver because they worked together on Die Hard with a Vengeance, I guess. But yeah, he does not seem to be, you know, he's on autopilot.
It's big, but not in a fun way, you know? And it's like, what are we doing? It is, you know, the rare movie that rests on the back of Justin Whalen.
Which, you know, what are your thoughts on Justin Whalen?
I don't know that he can carry a movie like this. I don't think he's the worst. I've enjoyed him in, like, Serial Mom, and I certainly watched him on Charles in Charge as a kid and was like, yeah, Justin Whalen. I thought it was funny when you referred to him as my boy.
Your boy. Well, because I was thinking of Child's Play, you know, like
Child's Play 3, I don't
Child's
like you. Yeah, that's his other, I guess, big swing at being in the lead of a movie.
I just imagine him, like, you know, going in there and being like, all right, here's my big action movie. Like,
right.
I'm leading. This is my lead role. And he goes in and he's got perfectly decent chemistry with Marlon Wayans. They've got a little, you know, little rapscallion energy with each other. And they do a little scene. They seem to play off each other pretty well and all that. And you're sort of, you know, but then he has these sort of scenes of like overwrought emotion or just the movie around him. As you said, just sort of he's another person who just gets swallowed up by the movie around him.
Yes.
Where there's just tons of unintentional comedy and
his reaction to the death of Marlon Wayans is not earned by this movie.
It's no, not, it's unforgivable. And the movie spends 25 minutes on it. Like, it's it, when he stands there talking, I was watching this late last night, and I was, he's talking to the gravestone, and I started to doze off, and I woke back up, and he was still talking to the gravestone. I was like, oh no.
I will say, I was A, surprised that they went through with the death of Marlon Wayans, and B, surprised that they left him dead for the entire movie, because I thought for sure at some point they're bringing him back, and we get to that last scene and I'm like, okay, here's the big happy ending, they bring him back, and instead it's like a cliffhanger for a sequel.
Right. Yeah, your movie clock kind of tells you that he should be, it's too early for him to die if he's not going to come back.
Right,
that,
exactly.
Like, that you normally, like, his death would be like the end of the first act, and then it would be like, okay, let's, you know, get to the next thing, because eventually he'll be back. But yeah, the movie just leaves him dead. Apparently Marlon Wayans flying back, because this movie shot in the Czech Republic, he's flying back between Brooklyn. flying back between there and Brooklyn, shooting Requiem for a Dream and Dungeons and Dragons at the same time. So speaking of tonal, like, tonal shifts.
Yeah.
And what must that have been like?
I like him in Requiem for a Dream. I think he should have probably done more dramatic roles, because he has a certain energy to him. I don't particularly love him in comedic roles, especially comedic roles that just cut him loose, just riff, man. Which is kind of what he's doing in Dungeons and Dragons. He's giving a very contemporary performance in what I'm assuming is supposed to be a period movie. I don't know when this movie is supposed to take place.
He certainly stands out. Doing his bits and things like that. But again, you know, you imagine that's what he was asked to do, right? He's asked to come in and bring some energy and bring some excitement and, oh, look at their chemistry together. And, you know, this, you know, by the midway point of the movie, you've got this, you know, the party, you've got the mage, and you've got the thieves and the, you know, the rogues, and you've got the troll, and you've got this, and you're like, okay, this I see medieval fantasy, or this, you know, sword and sorcery. I get what's going on here. His name is Snails, which is just a problem.
Oof.
But, you know,
they never rethought that one, right? Like, no, yelling out snails. What are we doing?
Well, I mean, the hero, the Justin Whalen's character's name is Ridley Freeborn, and then his buddy is Snails. And you're like, okay. Zoe McCollum's character is Marina Pretensa. Yes, I'm reading from IMDb.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Empress Savina. Profion.
Oh, I hate the names.
Snails.
And snails. Snails.
One of my favorite things in the, because this is a thing you see a lot, and again, not to go back to Star Wars. Star Wars did not originate cool sci-fi names, but when you see people who are clearly trying to ape the sort of majesty of certain Star Wars-y names,
sure.
Like Darth Vader is a name that sort of sound like weirdly sounds regal because it's got that kind of angular, you know, it's got the V and
right,
the R
right.
and the Th and all that. And then in Lucas talks about it, if you have not read The Making of Star Wars, the big old hardbound book, Making of Star Wars, I think there's one for all three of the original movies. They're brilliant. They cut through the bullshit of the legend of Star Wars because they were written and documented at the contemporary time during the actual making of the film before Star Wars became this huge legendary thing that Lucas could just constantly rewrite over and over again. There's wonderful little anecdotes in there about Lucas talking about where his names come from, and he's just like, I don't know, they sound cool. Darth Vader, Vader sounds cool. Like, I don't know, elevator, like, it just sounds cool. And so you see guys trying to, you know, Domador, Profion, Asmath, and you're like, no, you can't just do word salad. You can't just throw
right. Profion is something you take for an erection.
Exactly. You can't just throw Scrabble tiles on the table.
Honey, we got to go now. I took my Profion an hour ago.
I took my Profion. Listen, I hear snails help with that too.
I got an erection bigger than Jeremy Irons' performance.
you think that's an aphrodisiac? Hey, honey, let's go bigger than Jeremy tonight. I don't know if anything's bigger than Jeremy in that movie.
And Bruce Payne is like blue-lipped, give me my head back henchman. with the CGI snakes coming out of his ears. What are we doing? What, this is the weirdest curse I've ever seen.
That was another thing where you imagine, you know, early days of CGI where I guess we're locking the camera down and it's just like the actor just has to stand there and hold the pose. Well, you know, because it's like, all right, later the animator is going to go in and add this. But you just see him kind of getting bored as the snakes slowly come out of his ears. Again, I just, this movie is, I don't blame this movie on anyone in particular. Not, I've frankly, as I said, not really, I don't really even blame it on Courtney Solomon. The guy's just out of his depth. It's just a movie full of people who feel trapped and they feel like they feel cornered. And as you said, like someone's holding a gun to their family's head. Like it's just awkward for everyone.
It feels like, you know, if I was a big D&D guy, like, and I found out they were making a movie of Dungeons and Dragons, that's like, oh my gosh, I've waited my whole life for this. And it feels like being a comic book kid in the 90s when, you know, the movies that we were getting were like the Roger Corman Fantastic Four or the Albert Pune Captain America or the Dolph Lundgren Punisher, which... P.S. I've come around on all three of those movies, like, especially in the wake of what we've got since. I'm like, oh, that Fantastic Four is still the best of the Fantastic Four movies, and the Dolph Lundgren Punisher rules.
Yeah, Adam and I watched that one night when he was out here, and that movie, like, is solid, the Fantastic Four movie. That's a totally solid movie.
Right. I mean, they made it, you know, to, so that the rights wouldn't expire. But, like, it gets more right about Fantastic Four than anything else. But I just remember being a kid in the 90s being like, oh, my gosh, they made this movie. And then, like, Fantastic Four, you know, you find out, oh, it's so bad they're not releasing it. And you see Captain America, and it's like, what? He's just wearing a motorcycle helmet. What is this? Like,
Or even something like X-Men, where it's like, we can't wear the costumes. And they make the joke in the movie about the costumes. So I remember being a kid and seeing that and being like, oh,
so edgy.
Of...
Would you prefer yellow spandex? Yeah, motherfucker,
yeah.
I would.
Yeah, I would. That's, I'm a 90s kid. I grew up watching the X-Men cartoon. Like, yeah. You motherfucker, before the Avengers, nobody knew who the Avengers were in 2000. It was the X-Men. We were all about the X-Men, man.
Yeah. I just feel bad for the person who waited their whole lives for a Dungeons & Dragons movie, and then this is what they got. And I'm watching it, all these terrible effects, and I'm thinking of, like, Sci-Fi Channel, and I'm thinking of Blarp from Lost in Space. And then I have the thought, is this the Lost in Space of fantasy movies? And I decided no, because Lost in Space is a much better movie.
Much better movie.
Because
Lost in Space is a much better movie.
Stephen Hopkins is a really good director. He's just saddled with a really shitty Akiva Goldsman script. But there are so... We've done a whole podcast on Lost in Space. You can go listen to it.
Yes, please go back and listen to it. He makes that shit work. I like that movie.
We defend the shit out of Lost in Space, but there's so many elements in Lost in Space that do work. And I just don't think... Even taken individually, I can't really find any elements of Dungeons and Dragons that work. Maybe like the Richard O'Brien cameo, which is very much revealed like he's the biggest star in the world. When he turns around, it's like, can you believe we got Richard O'Brien? It's like
he might as well have come through a portal in the kids' kitchen.
90% of your audience does not know who that is.
Yeah. He's a fourth doctor, right?
Was he a doctor? I don't think so. He's riffraff and, you know, Rocky Horror, but I didn't know he was a doctor.
Oh, I'm thinking of who am I thinking of? I'm thinking of somebody else. Somebody was one of the doctors. He was a doctor. Hold on.
Somebody in Dungeons and Dragons?
Somebody in Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh.
I swear to God, Dr. Whovians, you are like shouting right now. I apologize sincerely.
Was it that elf guy who comes on for one scene
and says... It was one of them, yeah.
We are magic. I can't remember the stupid quote that he says, but it made me so mad.
Bullshit. Yeah, sorry. So, yeah. Oh, yes, you're right. Okay. So, Richard O'Brien, right, is Riff Raff, yeah. But there's another one. Oh, Tom Baker. I'm thinking of Tom Baker. Tom Baker is the elf, and he was the fourth doctor.
That was Tom Baker?
Yes.
I know Tom Baker as Doctor Who. I didn't realize that was him as the elf.
Yes.
That's embarrassing.
That's what I was thinking of. I had things mixed up. Yes.
No, that's okay.
Halvarth the elf.
I love Tom Baker as Doctor Who.
I picked up when did they reboot it? Nine. The Eccleston season. Was it the Eccleston?
It was the Eccleston. He was the first.
I picked it up with that, and I watched most of what came after that. But I've never done OG Doctor Who.
Okay. The only OG Doctor Who that I've watched is the Tom Baker stuff.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, because I used to watch it as a kid, and then Erica has gotten me like some of the. sets of Tom Baker on Blu-ray.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't move on before I say.
Oh yeah.
I love you, wife.
Yeah.
I love you, wife.
Yeah.
Remember when he says that in Lost in Space?
I do. R.I.P.
Because that's his wife.
R.I.P. William Hurt.
He wants to make sure that she
you,
knows.
You were a son of a bitch.
that he's talking to her. She's his wife. You go up to Erica, you're like, I love you, wife.
All the time.
Yeah. We acknowledge. That's what we do. Anyway. What else? What else with Dungeons and Dragons?
What's your favorite part of Dungeons and Dragons?
When it was over.
My favorite part of Dungeons and Dragons was towards the end. There's a dragon who gets killed and impaled on the top of like the steeple of a castle, and I just was thinking about the guys who were going to be tasked with getting the dragon off of there. Like, that was their job, just to push the dragon up until it fell and presumably crushed whatever was below. But just, like, what a shitty day at work that is. As soon as you see that dragon impale itself, you're just like, oh, fuck, that's going to be my job to clean that up.
Do you think the Empress Savina... listen, if she's so embattled in terms of her power, how did she become an empress? Like, what's the structure of... Is it Ishtar? Where Izmir. I'm sorry.
Izmir. I wish it was
the
Ishtar.
Empire of Ishtar.
Better movie. They introduce a dwarf and an elf, presumably because, like, well, it's Dungeons and Dragons. We have to have those. But they're not characters.
No.
They don't register at all, and the poor dwarf is fucking... He's like Party City Dwarf. He's like a... that red beard is terrible.
Yeah, it's not great. And it feels... Again, that actor is in a different movie, kind of doing... Not in a different movie, but he's in the movie he thinks he's in. He's in the movie, like, he's
And he's
roll,
trying to, be, like, be having fun.
He's gonna roll his eyes and...
Lee Ehrenberg, is that his name?
I think so, yeah. I clicked off that page.
Okay. Yeah.
I started looking at Lost in Space promotional materials.
I love you, wife.
I love you.
A lot of people would know Lee Ehrenberg as one of the like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Got it.
It's him and the guy that played Dwight on the UK Office with the wooden eye. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, he plays Pintel.
Sure.
I guess. one of Captain Barbarossa's crew.
Yeah, I remember him from those movies.
The third one?
What's that?
Which is the good one of those?
The first three.
Is it the first two?
The first three are all good.
The first three are all good, okay. I have not watched them in quite a while.
I like the first three. I have little use for 4 and 5.
Are they all, the first three are Verbinski and then he comes back for one? Or
he does not come back.
He does not come back.
The first three are Verbinski. 4 is Rob Marshall.
Oh.
And I can't remember who did 5. Rob Marshall is a shitty director, too.
What would you say, Lord of the Rings aside,
yeah,
you said you had kind of a fantasy allergy. Is there a fantasy... We watched Willow for F This Movie Fest.
I like Willow.
Year, right?
Yeah.
Willow. I'm thinking, what else is good? What fantasy movies are good?
I really like Dragon Slayer. I really like... the original Conan the Barbarian. Like early 80s fantasy, I certainly enjoy the nonsense of Beastmaster. It's just I need something to grab onto. I was watching this movie thinking about Warcraft, especially when they introduce like the dwarf and the elf, and I was like, well, Warcraft kind of does this same thing, but Warcraft, just as somebody who didn't play the game, remains totally inaccessible to me, even though there's some stuff in that movie that I like, and I think it's a much better movie than Dungeons and Dragons. I don't think it totally works, in part because of my fantasy allergy, and in part because it just doesn't work as a movie.
Remember Eragon?
I remember it existing. I never saw it.
My friends and I used to call that E-Ragon, because we were hilarious in 2006.
Yeah, you were.
That's why people didn't talk to us. I'm trying to think of really good like medieval fantasy. And I know a lot of you were like shouting, because this is before, I mean, really, this is before Lord of the Rings. This is before Game of Thrones. Like now there's a reliable kind of, frankly, a Game of Thrones ripoff on every streaming service. You know, something there that you know, has that same aesthetic, and therefore, you know, people think that that's the, it's the Star Wars problem. Well, it's got lightsabers in it, therefore it must be good. It's like, no, it's shitty. I'm scrolling through, really losing my, I'm going down swinging, folks.
I can't even like Google best fantasy movies, because there's all these movies that I just don't consider fantasy.
Did you ever see Gods of Egypt?
Did I see Gods of Egypt? No.
The Alex Proyas joint.
I did not.
I definitely wrote a great review of at some point. You can find it on the site, because I had a ton of fun with that movie. I remember nothing about it at this point, but I remember Jamie Lannister being one of the leads. He had one eye.
Isn't he like a giant or something?
He's made of gold, I think. I can't remember exactly what's going on in that movie. I think, I don't know. Gerard Butler's in it. I think this was right when, no, I guess it would have been before this. When does Butler go full Redbox? Like, when does Gerard Butler just decide, like, I'm going to be like a scumbag in a Redbox movie?
I mean, it's around that second or third
it's gotta be around
Blank
that time,
Has
right?
Fallen movie.
Right, yeah. Which I'm all for, by the way. I support that.
No, his two best performances are Den of Thieves and that Joe Carnahan movie that just came out.
Which one of us is going to get to it first? Which one of us is going to get to it first?
Probably you.
It's called
Cop Shop.
Cop Shop, okay.
Yeah.
I liked Greenland.
I didn't see Greenland.
Greenland,
but
is
I remember
kind of,
you liking it in your review.
Greenland is kind of worth your time, yeah,
okay.
Because it kind of tries. It's,
but it's a disaster movie, right? I kind of have a disaster movie allergy too.
Yeah, but it's worth your, I don't know, 1 hour. Oh, maybe it's not worth your 1 hour and 59 minutes.
That's a little long.
I might take that back. I don't know. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like what fantasy movies, because I think there's a misconception. I think that you need to have, the mistake that this movie makes, which is you need to have a world. You need to have a complicated world with lots of moving parts and lots of guilds and factions and characters. What you really need are just a couple archetypes. You need just a couple, you know, a decent motivation, a couple archetypes, and you need a world that's kind of unique enough that like, I remember when I watched the Assassin's Creed movie, and I've never played the Assassin's Creed games, but I was kind of thinking, like, oh, I think this is, like, a time travel thing. And then that got too, like, it got too intricate for me. I've never gone back and tried to rewatch that one. But there's a bunch of stuff in there where I go, like, oh, this is, like, one little, they cranked, like, to the left, one crank too much, one notch too far. You know, this like Dungeons & Dragons goes 15 notches too far. I mean, I think that's the mistake a lot of these fantasy movies make, which is why so many of them kind of blend together, and why something like, as you said, like a Conan the Barbarian, you know, which has a script from an insane fascist.
and is directed by an insane fascist.
We love John Milius, but, you know, let's be honest. That makes it stand out in a way that, you know, it's that kind of, again, it's the lightsaber problem. You don't need more lightsabers. You just need more characters that have motivations that we can understand.
Right.
Or even like game movies. Like, what's a good movie that comes from a game? You know, I say Silent Hill. I'm just going to mention
Silent
Hill.
You do say Silent Hill. Yeah.
I love me some Silent Hill.
I can't think of one that I really like that comes from a
Mortal
game.
Mortal Kombat is always, that's video games, obviously. I mean, Battleship, you know, they did make a movie out of Battleship.
And there are people who swear by the Battleship movie, but I am not one of them.
Sure. Getting really worried about that Last of Us series HBO is putting out. I love the Last of Us games, and they're making a series with the Game of Thrones folks, and I'm getting nervous about that. It's one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter if it's good, because I still have the thing that I love and they can't take it away from me. But we don't have a ton of success.
I mean, there's almost no,
Uncharted?
I haven't seen Uncharted yet.
You're fine.
I realize I like 80s fantasy. There's almost no 90s fantasy. And then 2000s become kind of lousy with fantasy because of the success of Lord of the Rings. And I like Lord of the Rings. and little else until, like, kind of Game of Thrones, which I guess is widely recognized as the latest best fantasy property.
Yeah.
I stopped watching at a certain point because of my allergy to certain things, where I just was like, I can't give this my full attention, and I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it gets bad. It gets not so good. And the show is like 30% of the complexity of the books, and the books make it work. But
I read the first two books and really liked them, and then it's been so long since I read them that I'm like, am I going to be completely lost picking up the third one because I don't remember who anybody is.
Third one's the best one. Storm of Swords is a great book.
Shit. That one's all right. Now I gotta read it. One.
But anyway, yeah, I'm looking through. I don't see a lot of fan, and I'm sure there's something we're forgetting, and somebody is shouting.
Oh, like, yeah, hey, for
it's,
sure.
It's this movie, and I'm sure I'll hear that and be like, oh, that's a great movie, and I love that movie, and I can't believe I forgot it. But right now, I'm just post Game of Thrones, post Lord of the Rings, that in between time of Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones. I mean,
and we're talking like specific. Well, we're talking like specifically like kind of sword and sorcery fantasy. Exactly. Yeah, because you can call the Harry Potter movies fantasy, and
right, that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Prince of Persia. Remember Prince of Persia?
I saw Prince of Persia in
the
theaters.
The Sands of Time.
It's my favorite movie about time sand.
But I don't know that there's a lot I can really think of, but I know it's not this. I know it's not Dungeons and Dragons.
It's definitely not this. I really have my hopes up. I have a soft spot for New Line movies. I think they're always the underdog, and a lot of times I think they were sneaky good. I have a soft spot for movies that are like sincere and trying.
Yeah.
And I do think this movie is sincere
and for sure.
Trying, but I just couldn't warm up to it because I just thought it was so inept and kind of boring, and there's no character arcs. Like, there's no way in for me. There wasn't a thing that I could latch onto and be like, okay, I'm not liking a lot of this stuff, but this, you know, Ridley's character is really interesting, or he has an arc that I can follow, because he doesn't. It's just like he goes from thief to hero with little reluctance. And
see, Patrick, I feel like you maybe missed it. See, the Empire of Ishtar is under siege by the evil Mandalorian.
Right.
And he wants to overtake. It's so funny because you could say like asshole, like Star Wars or this or that. Like they all do that. They all do opening crawls and world. But there's such a stark difference between stuff that you can immediately care about and stuff you can immediately latch on to. You can start Star Wars without watching the opening crawl. You don't have
right.
to do all that stuff.
But I
you
want all my.
You see a little ship and a big ship and a princess, and you're like, okay, I get it. I know what's going on.
I want all my opening crawls to begin with. The dead speak. Remember when they brought back Palpatine? That was so
remember
good.
When Palpatine returned? Remember?
And
remember
Rey was a Palpatine? That was awesome.
I swear.
Palpatine
there
fucked
there.
Somebody?
That are just like, no, you don't get it. Like the movie, like it's definitely a payoff of like everything that's come before. And like, no, motherfucker, it's not. They shot that off the top of their heads. They're tricking you again into thinking that there was a plan when there wasn't. There is no plan. They are making it up. They are bullshitting you. You know what's cool? The New Line logo. Remember the new? Remember when?
God,
the
I love
logo?
The New Line logo. Remember I love the music. It's like you're gonna be watching something cool.
And then it all come in and like kind of slowly fade. I always remember like the Touchstone logo did the same. Remember a little blue spot would go across the screen
yes.
and come back.
I'm watching Real Genius last night. The TriStar logo with the little Pegasus
TriStar
running, right?
Pegasus.
I don't
what
have.
What can't that Pegasus do?
I don't have the same nostalgia for like contemporary studio logos.
No.
I don't get excited when one comes up. You know.
You don't like that Marvel logo.
I mean, sometimes, but I just have been so burned out on it. Like, once upon a time, I would get giddy because it was like, I'm watching a new Sam Raimi Spider-Man, you know? But now it's just like every fourth movie that comes out has the Marvel logo at the
you
front
know what,
of it.
You know what's really killed it? Because if you're putting that before Avengers Infinity, you know, bah, 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 and you're like, okay, got it, big epic movie coming.
Yeah.
But then they put it in front of like an episode of Moon Knight.
Right, exactly.
Like, no,
right.
No. Like that was actually one thing Disney did intelligently, which was they came up with a new TV logo for Star Wars. They don't do the Star Wars fanfare at the front of every episode of like Book of Boba Fett. Like that would just be so ridiculous. Mm. And it would totally dilute everything. But it's all coming back to Star Wars. Sorry,
it's okay. Star Wars, you know, if you're going to call that fantasy, that's good fantasy.
Yeah, sure.
The first space opera, three? Actually. Yeah, I wouldn't call it fantasy. Yeah, I guess I would call it science fiction, but there's no science to it.
There's no science. Science fantasy, right?
Science
speculative fantasy.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's a science fantasy movie that I like? John Carter. That movie doesn't get enough love.
So I have not gone back and revisited that. Is that – or no, yes, I have because we did reserve seating on it.
Yeah, that's right. You guys didn't really like it.
Oh, my God. My brain is melting. Yeah, I think that was another case of, if I'm remembering correctly, both of us kind of being like, I think I like what this movie wants to do,
yeah.
But maybe it didn't quite do it. You're a bigger fan of it.
I am, yeah. I think it's
okay. So that's actually probably a good example because there's a lot of gobbledygook in that movie too, but it maybe holds together a little bit more. With a little bit more intention than this one. Certainly with somebody like Andrew Stanton directing it, a lot more confident.
Yeah. I just think it works. The characters are more colorful and more interesting. And again, just the humanity of John Carter having lost his wife at least gives you kind of a through line because there's that scene where he's remembering
right.
fighting while he's fighting off this army of Martian, alien, whatever. Yeah, there's enough going on in that movie that I can overcome, you know, the fact that they call Mars like Barsoom or whatever they call it.
Right.
And I say this as somebody who never read the original Edgar Rice Burroughs stories. I think I tried to, like on a Kindle, back when I had a Kindle, but I didn't get very far.
I know this isn't Sword and Sorcery, but what about Riddick? What about the Riddick movies? We like those, right?
I like the Riddick movies, yeah. I think the second one tries the hardest to do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to think of movies that have nonsense world building like
yes,
that, where it's like
for sure.
the undead and the necro
necromongers
and the all that. Like I remember right. watching that, being like, "Ooh, this is too much."
I'm a necromonger. Oh yeah, well I'm Judi Dench.
And wasn't she like made of wind in that movie? Didn't
it's
she,
possible. Like,
and she was a Force ghost. I don't know what happened.
Who knows? Back to Star Wars.
But Vin's a big weirdo. Like that's kind of something that could be, you know, that's along these similar veins, right? Because isn't he a big D&D guy? And
he
that's the whole
is.
Reason Riddick exists is because he's a big nerd. And
yes, and I would be so on Team Vin Diesel if he wasn't such an asshole.
You're right. Yeah, there's that unfortunate problem.
If he wasn't literally chasing directors off of his productions, you know.
What, you think he's hard to work with?
I think he might be.
Yeah. When you provoke Dwayne The Rock Johnson to write a strongly worded Instagram post about your professionalism, that's the most energy we get out of Dwayne The Rock Johnson anymore. It's like, listen, I just don't think this guy's very professional. I just don't think, listen, I get up at 3, I go to bed at 3, I grind hard, and listen, I don't work with anybody who doesn't grind as hard as I do. It's like, Dwayne
Johnson
Remember
is the
Red Notice?
He's the Marvel of actors. I didn't watch Red Notice, but it's
Marvel of actors.
Where once upon a time it was like I got excited to see Dwayne Johnson show up in a movie, and now I'm just like I'm good never seeing another movie with Dwayne Johnson in it.
Yep, he is gone full. Yes, he is. He is the Marvel of actors. He's a product, and again, Red Notice is a movie that made by the Netflix algorithm. That's what that was. Anyway.
Dungeons
Snails.
And Dragons is good, though.
Yeah.
I've really come around on it.
I like this movie a lot more now that we've talked about it.
Now that we've talked about how bad other modern movies are.
Like
Dungeons and Dragons still sucks. Yeah, no, I took a bunch of Profion. I'm about to pass out.
Azmath.
Oh, God. Snails.
Snails. We like Thora Birch, though. We feel bad for Thora.
Yeah, you know, I know she had, like, crazy family stuff, too, and her parents were, like, her dad was, like, her agent or something, and maybe he forced her to be in this movie. I don't know the story of how she ended up in Dungeons & Dragons, but she does not seem to be here willingly.
No. This is a bad movie that is no one's fault.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice way of putting it, I think.
Like, it's just, it doesn't feel malicious. It doesn't feel cynical. It feels like everybody, not that everybody was trying because the actors look lost, but like everybody is kind of trying to do something. The director is trying to direct it. He's doing his best. Their actors are trying to be charming.
But also, make no mistake, it's a really bad movie.
Let's just be clear. Don't watch it. It's a really bad movie.
It's not like the ambitious failure that we like to talk about but there's all this interesting stuff in it. Like, it is incompetent, and
it's incompetent, and it's not again, the nicest thing we can say about it is it may mean well.
Right.
And you can feel that.
Right.
And that's about it.
It doesn't feel cynical.
Like Highlander 6 or whatever, that movie feels cynical. That movie feels like it's just trying to go through the motions and cashing in, or, you know, whatever other major blockbuster you could do. You know, Jurassic World Dominion is just like...
Still a better movie than Dungeons & Dragons, even though I did not like it.
Because it has Laura Dern in it.
And Bryce Dallas Howard.
And they share scenes together.
Like, that's a genius move right there.
There's a scene with the two of them in it, and they have a conversation.
Money in the bank, baby.
That's helps the movie pass the Bechdel test, I guess. I don't know. But like,
That's
why it's there.
Oh, God.
Remember in that movie where she goes into the water, right? And she, like, ducks down into the little swamp?
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that?
I remember that.
Yeah, that was good. Laura Dern. Remember when she and Alan Grant kissed?
I remember that, yeah.
Because that's what people want.
They're a couple now, and I ship them.
They're a couple in the movie, and that's what's important. What's important about my Jurassic Park nostalgia is that I always wanted to see them kiss.
Right.
And I never got to see them kiss. So this is a love letter to the fans.
Everything's a fucking love letter.
This one's for the fans. You know, it's really about those people who just really wanted to see Sam Neill and Laura Dern smooching. You know what's a great movie, by the way?
What's that?
Jurassic fucking Park.
Yeah, it is.
I just rewatched that movie, and it's fucking great.
And what's amazing about it is that it's, like, one of the most successful movies ever. It spawned this enormous franchise. It's directed by Steven fucking Spielberg. And I would still call it sneaky good because he makes it look so effortless that you don't appreciate how good it is.
And there's, like, aside from the dinosaur effects, but there are little bits of it that seem kind of quaint. Like, some of the sets I was rewatching, like, so some of the sets seem kind of quaint. It's kind of, you remember that this is 1990, you know, two, whenever they're shooting it, right?
Right.
And you're kind of like, oh, this is kind of, he's making something out of this. Like, he knows where to spend the money and where to cut back and how to have an actor carry a scene. And
just putting
great.
Them through the ride where Mr. DNA like explains the technology to them is such smart storytelling. And in Jurassic World Dominion, we get like a weird news broadcast talking about biosyn. And I fucking checked out like I did during the opening monologue of Dungeons & Dragons.
Can you remind me, what's the opening monologue of Dungeons & Dragons?
I already closed the tab, but it involves some bullshit.
Yeah, no, that movie's, I knew that movie was going to be bad about 2.5 minutes in. I was like, oh no, this is,
yeah.
Remember when it introduces that whole thing and then doesn't follow through really on
the
anything?
Whole thing of dinosaurs coexisting with humans
dinosaurs
on Earth?
Dinosaurs coexisting with humans. And
yeah,
then, like,
remember when that's the easiest home run movie to make ever and instead they're just like, Jurassic Laboratory.
Remember when like there's that scene where the T-Rex thing is chasing them and it's all 12 of the main characters trying to hide from the T-Rex and they go up and down the treehouse laboratory and you're like, what is this funny? Am I supposed to be laughing at this?
Just the insulting insinuation that this new Saved by the Bell class is as beloved as the original class. I take offense to.
You just have to stop shooting Chris Pratt from a low angle and
trying
to get me to care.
Like, I don't. Just because you put him in the frame with Alan Grant does not mean they're equals.
No, they are not the same. Tell me. All right, everybody listening right now.
No one's listening anymore.
Don't look at anything. Don't look at your phone. Don't cheat. What is Chris Pratt's character's name in that trilogy of movies?
Owen Grady.
All right, I'm wrong. All right, fair enough. Okay.
But I think I've looked at it like 5 times. Like,
okay, because I could not tell you. I had to.
And she's Claire something.
Claire Dunaway, Claire Denmark.
Hold on.
I just reviewed this movie. I just had to look at this. Claire something.
I'll find her
name.
Did
you know? No, never mind. We'll talk about this all my
time. Claire Deering.
Claire Deering.
Yeah.
Bryce Dallas Howard. You can't act like they're not the same. And they're not even like large. Why did they put them in that weird like locust laboratory? And
why is so much of the movie about locusts?
Because we have to deal with
dinosaurs are on the planet and we're worried about fucking locusts.
Yeah. Well, because the movie begins with them going, dinosaurs are out in the world. It's not a big deal. Right. It's like a mild inconvenience. Not really sure it's enough to hang a blockbuster film on. So there are these locusts. Remember when Lewis Dodson inexplicably has the can of Barbasol? Did he go back to the island and dig it out from underneath the... Did he just save a replica that... Because, I mean, we're making fun of Biosyn. To be fair, Biosyn is from the Crichton book. It's
which I didn't realize until I was reading your adaptation piece that I was like, oh my god, Biosyn has always been around?
No, that's 100% a Crichton thing. That comes from the first book, yeah.
Well,
it doesn't make it any less
Biosyn.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
But the implication, but that's just, again, it's just more lightsabers. It's just fan wank. It's just like, yeah, I don't know. Remember the can of Barbasol? Like, remember that? Remember when they dressed her exactly? They dressed Ellie Sattler exactly the same way. She's not Indiana fucking Jones. Like, what are you doing? Nobody's listening to this anymore. I'm really sorry for wasting your time.
It's a bad blockbuster.
Folks are like driving to work, or they're driving home from work, or they're trying to enjoy this in the comfort of their homes. And I'm talking about bullshit. I'm really sorry.
It's okay. We're 90 minutes into the Dungeons and Dragons episode, so people deserve a no prize if they've made it this far.
You are welcome.
Anything else you want to say, Rob?
I love you, wife. That's what I want to say.
Thank you guys for being with us all month long and for celebrating June's Exploitation with us. Thank you for listening to us rag on Dungeons and Dragons, a movie that, you know, hurt no one. We're just upset about the state of the world, and this is what we're going to take it out on.
We're taking it out on 2000's Dungeons
A movie
Dragons.
No one remembers.
No one saw.
People tried their best to make, and yet here we are being assholes about it 22 years later.
You know, we are products of our environment, and our environment is shit. So.
There you go. We will be back next week with a show on something. Who the fuck knows what? If there's still a country to podcast into.
Try to love each other, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.